Shank Baggily. Shank Baggily. Shank Baggily. Hello and welcome to Shapbaggily, an old Lincolnshire adjective to describe absolutely anything loose and disorderly, which sums up this Lincolnshire lass quite nicely. In a moment we'll chat peat-free compost, vegan cookery and discover who has the royal warrant to supply smoked salmon to the royal family. First though, with it being episode 16, here are a few other things with the same number. Feathers in the tail of a red or spotted grouse. Percentage of the world's silver from Mexico and the world's grapes grown in Italy, and the longest unbroken run at number one in the US charts for One Sweet Day, duet with Mariah Carey and Boyz II Men from the 2nd of December 1995 to the 16th of March 1996. The reason I'm smiling is we had the same with Bryan Adams. Do you remember the Everything I Do It For You? Yes, that was 16 weeks, number one, 1991. And I remember that song very well. I was going back several years now, probably 20 plus years, thinking about it, when I was asked to judge something like a carnival queen at a village fete, an event in Staffordshire. And I remember going up there and basically it was the young lady had to walk round the field. And depends what she was wearing and how she sort of moved herself and all this. There were other things, but I remember that bit more. And they would go walk all the way around the field. Well, the first one came in and the music went on. It was Bryan Adams, Everything I Do For You. So look into my eyes. And then she went round. And by the time she went out the other end of the field, the song had finished. So the second Carnival Queen arrived in. Uh-huh. Look into my eyes, it's Bryan Adams, Everything I Do It For You. This went on. There must have been, when you look back, I think there was about seven. So needless to say, at the end of that, I can only think the chap that was on the PA had either left his music back at home and it was the only one available in his glove box compartment in his car. I really don't know. But it was the only song that they played. Oh dear, happy days. Right then, time to hear from our first guest, and it's private chef Andy Tibbs from Poco Cleaner in Cheltenham in Gloucestershire. Andy has been a vegetarian for 40 years and vegan for the past 8. So with his menus being completely plant-based, has the choice now on offer, with it being more popular, made his life a lot easier?
Yes, the proliferation of kind of plant-based and vegan culture over the last few years has been good for business, but it's also good for people. It's much more easy for them to actually feed themselves. I have a question about whether they should work a bit harder with the kind of food they're feeding themselves sometimes and actually learn a little bit more of cooking, but hey, that's just me. But yeah, it is, on the whole, it's a lot easier for people.
I noticed there was very much an Asian style to your cookery. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's very much part of what I do. The kind of Middle Eastern, Mediterranean and Eastern is pretty much exclusively the way I cook. And I think that's because the vegetable is the hero in all of those styles of cooking. So I can really sort of go to town with as many vegetables as I can get my hands on.
Is that where we lack then, if we try and do vegetables? Because I suppose it's a traditional thing, isn't it? Vegetables, yeah, would accompany something. These have got to be, as you say, you call them the heroes.
I think in those styles of cooking, a lot of the dishes are entirely vegetable based and designed to be part of a much wider meal. Yes, that might include a meat or fish. In the Mediterranean, that would be relatively simply prepared as well, but there would be a surround of dishes that goes with that. It wouldn't be a plate with a few slices of meat and vegetables added to the plate. It's a much broader concept than that.
So it's highlighting that flavour, because tofu, you said yourself, on its own, if it's anyone's tasteless, tried it, yeah, it's just nothing.
Utterly tasteless. Yeah, it tastes of nothing. I mean, you could probably argue that many, many types of chicken that you buy nowadays are equally as tasteless, but they need some seasoning up against it. It's great for texture and it's a good protein, from a balanced meal point of view. But yeah, it needs a bold flavour up against it to make sense of it. Otherwise, it is just, if it's not cooked properly, it's slimy and tasteless, and people just won't ever go near it again. And who could blame them?
So your business then, 8 years ago, you must have seen it fly, Andy.
Yeah, it took 2 years. The first 2 years were quite tough. And then I think the biggest thing, the most significant thing, is that my clients have now got the confidence to actually say to their families, do you know what, our wedding is just going to be totally plant-based. Whereas perhaps in the past they would have taken a compromise and used a caterer who would provide sort of plant-based options, as it were. Yeah. But I think now clients that are veggie and vegan, and not even always that, just, you know, interested in good, healthy, sustainable food, are much more confident, and I think there's much more people around who are bolder and braver to try my food. And you know, I do believe that my food will actually win over most people as well once they've eaten it, irrespective of their diet. That's immaterial to me.
Yeah, you don't have to be a vegan or vegetarian to enjoy it. It's everyone, as you said. I saw it on your material. Everyone friendly, was that the word?
Everyone friendly. Yeah, absolutely. I think that kind of works. You know, I speak to, the fathers of the bride and groom who were deeply suspicious of the dinner they were going to get, and they're incredibly complimentary. And I think that's because they've got something they didn't expect to get. They didn't really know what vegan food was. They thought it was something dehydrated that went into outer space with astronauts. But
lovely.
But you know, I'm being flippant. But you know, because I've done things so differently, and cooked with vegetables, and not attempted to use meat replacement products, which, you know, I'd be a fool to try and sell meat replacement products to people whose normal diet is meat. That would be stupid. So. Best to go round the outside and do something completely different.
And the secret is, it's the spices, the add-ons.
Yeah.
Get yourself some. Well, what would your, I don't know, let's say three store cupboard favourites, musts, if you're going to do spice it up.
I think if you've got some turmeric and some cumin and coriander in your cupboard, and then you've got fresh garlic, fresh ginger, fresh chilli, then you've got the basis for just about every Indian meal that's ever existed, with a few extra bits added to it when you need to change the flavours.
And his flavours were amazing. Thanks to Andy from Poco Kalina, and I'll put his details on Shat Bagley's Facebook and Instagram pages. If you're listening to this on the day of its release, then I'm currently working at Ludlow Food Festival, and it's going to be temperatures of possibly 30 degrees. So think of me, won't you? To the week, I mean, it's one extreme to another here in the UK, and if you've ever visited, you'll know that exactly. To the week, I was having to wear a washing-up bowl, can you believe, to protect my hair from the rain when I was moving from one state to another. One chap thought I looked like an extra from Dad's Army. Don't panic, Mr. Mannerin. On to our next guest, and we're going to hear about a royal warrant, which is the prestigious document allowing a company to use the royal arms in connection with their business of supplying goods or services to the royal household. So it's a big deal, especially as there are only around 800 holders of it, from individual craftspeople to global multinationals. Seven and Wise Smokery in Gloucestershire was founded in 1989 by Richard Cook and is renowned for its much admired smoked salmon and cured fish. On site, they also have a farm shop, cafe and restaurant, with a MasterChef Professionals champion at the helm, the hugely talented Mark Stinchcombe.
Yeah, so we've got the royal warrant for the smoked salmon that goes into the palace. So we've had the royal warrant since appointed by the Queen, but now kind of transferred across to the King. So the royal warrant is a massive deal for the Seven and Wise Smokery. It kind of allows us to kind of get into different places. America kind of look highly upon those sorts of things. We kind of ship to 32 different countries within the world. So yeah, the smoked salmon company is a huge part of the business, but the kind of restaurant, deli, a cafe, where we've, and the fish room that we've got it's kind of just an amazing kind of haven in within the Gloucestershire sort of area that people just, it's kind of an unknown secret, but then it's just so busy and we're so like lucky with all of the produce and all of the shellfish and seafood that we get through to the fishmongers and then straight up to the restaurant.
So who supplies you with the salmon then?
So we kind of get lots from around different of the British Isles. By the Faroese Islands up and towards Scotland is kind of where we get most of the salmon from.
And so it comes to you, and then the process. What sort of are we talking?
So the process in the smokery is they take the fish, they go through a filleting machine that kind of goes down, takes the two fillets off, splits it down the centre, drops the two fillets onto a conveyor belt. Then you've got people hand picking the pin bones off of it, trimming it up nicely. Then as it comes off that conveyor belt, it's then salted. And then put onto the racks. It is then aged for 24 hours within the salt, kind of keep that processing, because you need salt and sugar to kind of allow the smoke really to kind of enhance within the salmon. So it is then it's washed off and then put into the smokers. The smokers can be anywhere between 6 hours to 24 hours, depending on different spec that the client has. It's then taken from that, allowed to kind of age for another day, just to kind of enhance that flavour, and then it's cut or sent whole or sliced. And so
it's all right for these 32 countries, but us in the UK have to come to you because you don't go by the website, do you, anymore?
No, we stopped doing the delivery, but yeah, we kind of want to bring people to Gloucestershire, and we want people to come in and try the smoked salmon, see the business, see what the restaurant, see the fishmongers, see the, like, what we're doing with the fish, and ideally have an amazing meal, come down, buy some smoked salmon, and then leave.
Yeah. Do you get folk who have one of those 32 countries? They must, when they come, because Americans love coming over to the UK. Do they then come to the smokery? It must be amazing if they do.
Yeah, we get a huge variety of different people coming through, and it's. And just kind of the Royal Warrant is obviously a big draw, and just the kind of the produce and itself is just a big enough draw to kind of allow people to kind of see what we're doing and kind of go back and go, wow, that was amazing.
So apart from the Royal Warrant, are we allowed to ask where else it goes, or is that as big as it gets?
We supply to Claridge's, we supply to Harrods, we've got the smokery also cut fish, so they cut fish for Wimbledon, British Airways, any large events, Ascot Racecourse, anything that's on their members or their VIP tents. Usually the fish is kind of brought into us, we cut it all and then send it off. So it's quite a diverse company, but it's just got such massive potential.
In
little old Gloucestershire, yeah. Just on the riverbank.
Thank you to Mark Stinchcombe, and a must visit, methinks. Seven and Y Smokery at Westbury-on-Severn is open 6 days a week, and I will put the link to their website on our social media pages. I must tell you something that happened this week. I had my eyes opened quite literally. I took a friend to hospital to have her cataract removed. It's a miracle what they do. We got there and the nurse asked the usual questions, just to check who they thought she knew, who they thought she was, and all that. And me trying to calm my friend a little, when asked which eye they were going to be operating on, I said the middle one. Fortunately, the nurse did have a sense of humour. The surgeon was about 12 years old, but fair dues. Friend came out of the procedure and she could already see better out of the eye than before. Amazing. Now, what if I said heat-free compost? If, like my sister, your heart sinks, then you'll definitely want to listen to our final guest, Josh Egan-Wire, Head of Horticulture at Pershore College in Worcestershire. Here in the UK, we are building towards peat-free, with retailers banned from selling peat compost by the end of next year. But what about other countries?
There's a movement now in towards Germany and some places in Europe where they are starting to move into peat-free, but really we are kind of leading the way in the reduction of peat use. However, other countries like Australia, they've not really ever had access to peat very much or at all. So it's not a unique idea growing in peat-free compost, or, you know, compost not made from draining peat bogs. But we are certainly, I believe, leading the way in that reduction of it and looking for alternative materials.
Now, you had a few issues, like a lot of people, and it's interesting, it's something as simple as, was it don't squeeze me?
Yeah, that's exactly it. We ignored the supplier's recommendations when we first potted and used it exactly the same way that when we were using peat-based compost. So we'd pot the plant up, we'd give it a little firm and a squeeze, and pat it down and make sure it was all nice and tidy. And we lost maybe 80% of about 2,000 plants we potted. And it was devastating. It was really annoying. We went to the supplier and said, what have we done? And he said, you've squeezed it, haven't you? And I went, well, we've just, how have you potted? And we showed him. And yep, sure enough, we hadn't really been, you know, appreciated the difference in just how you have to treat it. And that very quickly we learned, and all of a sudden found that we were getting through less compost as well, because we weren't trying to fit, for example, 2.5 litres worth of compost in a 2-litre pot, which is a waste of money. And I've had fantastic results with using it ever since on 98% of our crops. Some of them have even done better.
So yeah, the old style is you'd press, wouldn't you? So we've just got to do things differently. So when we come to pot something then, because the urge is there to make it, tuck it in like a little bed thing, is to, what do we do then, Josh?
So you almost imagine that the compost is like sand, and you're not going to be able to compress sand, are you, if you get it in the pot. So you would fill the pot up to the level you need to do to drop the smaller young plant in, if you're potting up something, for example, pop that in the pot, and then just using your hand as a shovel, scoop the compost into the pot and give it a light little shake in the tap, because it's quite a fine material nowadays, the peat-free compost anyway. You aren't going to end up with big lumps and big pockets in it, so you give it just a little shake and a little tap. If you want to fluff the compost off the top, if you've got excess, that's not a problem, but don't start firming it in and giving it a bit of a squeeze and all of a sudden you've got an inch left in the top of the pot that was full. You just fill it up to the top or thereabouts the top, shake, and that's it. And that's the easy way to make sure that you don't squeeze. So shake, don't squeeze, really, is it?
Okay, and then we're going to say for bedding and pots, we want a bit of some winter bedding. We're gonna have to do something, aren't we? Otherwise it'll just hang about. What any tips there?
You kind of want to make sure you're using the right compost for things. So for example, for bedding plants is generally when you get them at the size that you can buy them in a garden centre, they're usually then fine to go on into peat-free compost, and I've had wonderful success with doing them in pots. You give them a little bit of a firm, but it's about not squeezing down and giving them a really firm thing. You can give things like using the two fingers approach, maybe. You give them a little press down just to get them to settle, but you're not actually squeezing the whole volume of the pot like you would do with peat, where you get your whole hand in, you're tucking it like you're pushing pastry into a pastry tray. Yeah. That same sort of thing. It's not about that. It's about just getting them in with the least amount of pressure possible, to make sure that all the air pockets in the compost stay, that the water can drain through freely, because that's another interesting, people say that peat-free compost dry out too quickly, but if you squeeze it too much, it sits wet and it will never drain, and it sits there like a bog, and it again isn't conducive to a good growing environment.
I've heard the term, peat-free compost, you've got to add the feed, there's nothing in there initially. Well, that's wrong, isn't it? But you maybe have to feed it more often.
Absolutely, yep. So a lot of base multi-purpose compost that were peat-based, feeds for the first 4 to 6 weeks, but they're fairly forgiving, and if you don't add lots of extra feed, lots of plants would be okay, or you wouldn't notice the difference as much than you would if you'd fed them. You'd have always ended up with better plants and a better show, but it wouldn't have been as noticeable. In peat-free compost, yes, the nitrogen isn't there as much and isn't readily as available, because a lot of them are bark-based. But yeah, so applying a liquid or a granular feed a little bit more often is very much a good idea and a good thing to do. However, it's about buying the right compost, like I said earlier. So if you want to spend a little bit more money on a compost, which is worth it, you can actually negate the need to do feeding. So there are some brands that use bracken and comfrey and things. Comfrey is a fantastic thing. You make comfrey tea out of it, steep it, and you get this smelly liquid out of it, and it's wonderful feed, natural feed for the garden. Putting that in the compost gives it natural food, so in turn you might spend a bit more on some compost, but actually you've probably saved yourself 5 or 6 quid, because you haven't had to buy two lots of plant feed for it to remember, and also remember which week it is you're meant to be feeding it or not as well. And again, it's about you pay for what you get with compost now. The supermarket multi-buy deals, you get a standard of product, and if you go to a garden centre, especially the independent garden centre that has the freedom to choose what products they stock a little bit more, rather than it all being a commercial decision, you end up paying a little bit more, but just having so much more enjoyment and success with it. So ultimately, you don't feel disenfranchised, you're not paying as much fees, not wasting fertilisers by putting it on all so much, which is generally better for everybody. Not buying too much in one go, buying a bag here, buying a bag there, and having a go with it. If you can get online and see what other people are doing and how they've found to grow with it, it's very much, you know, a collaborative sort of thing now, I think, for people just trying to investigate, because all peat-free composts are very different. Unlike peat-based composts, it was peat. Yeah, it might come from different regions, but ultimately it's a very similar product and it was very forgiving. And now it's a lot more about education and just relearning how you're using it and persevering, having another go, because there ultimately isn't any option. And what I don't want to see are people, when, you know, in the UK here, when the peat ban for retail customers to be able to buy peat comes in, as it stands at the minute, at the end of 2024, people get disenfranchised from gardening and stop gardening. You know, I want to be able to make sure that we get the message out that there is a way to, there is a way forward, and it is very bright. And you know, we, myself and others in the industry, can help you do that.
You touched on that, the make sure on all the bags when it was produced, because you're saying there's about a 6 month shelf life effectively.
I can't say for all brands, but I know certainly for the ones that we've you know, that I use very successfully, after 6 months, it's just because of the materials that make up the composition of this compost, it just doesn't have quite the same staying power. And when it's been rained on every day by you know, the glorious British sun we've had this year, or like last year, it's been baked in the bag like it's a bag of boil in the bag rice or something, it doesn't do it any favours. It isn't as forgiving as peat-based compost. You have to treat it well as well, and not see it as a commodity, not waste it so much. So store it in a cool, dark place like the garage or the shed, rather than just leaving it unwrapped up outside. But even wrapped up outside isn't good enough. Get it out of the elements, look after it, and only buy what you need for the next couple of months or the next few weeks that you need, rather than stocking up at the start of the season going, that'll last me for the year, because the compost won't last you for the year. You'll get bad results, and then you'll feel disheartened and feel like it's the compost's fault, and it isn't. It's just that re-education of how now we need to garden with these composts.
Were you growing in some compost? Because you're hurting my arm. You're so tall. To this microphone, you're so tall.
And every time I see my relatives, I'm 32 now, and every time I see them, they still go, have you grown some more? And I went, I stopped, I think, about 10 years ago.
I think it's the seaweed.
Yeah, it's a seaweed feed, yeah.
He really was tall. And must say thank you to Elvis, who you may have heard singing in the background. Josh Egan-Wire from Pershore College, really interesting to chat with him. And I certainly learnt a lot from him about using peat-free compost. The ones he does recommend are Melcott Silver Grow, which is highly regarded in the industry. And the one Josh mentioned with the bracken, the sheep's wool and the comfrey, it's Dale Foot. And as always, I'll pop all the info you need on Instagram and Facebook pages. Couple of hellos. Been a while since I've done this, so apologies. Wendy, Sharon and T, hello. Also to Jerry, talked about learning Italian last week when I was going to introduce Felice on stage, which will be today at Ludlow. I'll let you know how that went next week. Va bene is okay in Italian, says Jerry. And the only other word she knows is fragola, which is strawberry. And as Jerry says, how she survived in Rome for 2 weeks, she'll never know. Mama Scrubs loved the bells last week during Reggie's gardening chat. And Jane loved the tuna whisperer. And hi to Elizabeth, who messes with a recipe, asking if I'd heard of beef fizz. To be precise, she included OMG, as the tagline is, gonna be hot this weekend? Cool off with a beef fizz. So refreshing. And it is. 2 cans of condensed beef broth, 1 cup of chilled ginger ale, and 2 tablespoons of lemon juice. Combine the ingredients and pour over ice in glasses, and it'll serve 6 to 8 servings. Yes, thanks for that, Elizabeth. And thank you as ever for getting in touch. Really love hearing from you, be it via social media or email, which is podcast@theshackbagley.co.uk. And as I always say, if you feel the urge to leave a review, please don't fight it. And I hope you're following or subscribing, as it does help when I ask guests to join us. So that's it for another week. Thank you for listening and see you next time. Right then, beef fizz. Well, it's definitely going to be hot.